I call the meeting of the Wednesday, March 15th, 2026 House Veterans and Military Affairs Division to order. We begin our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Representative Ray Rauer, would you like to start us off?
Sure. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin our agenda, I want to remind everybody that the committee chair maintains control of this hearing, and I have the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in the walkways or aisles, or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require assistance, please speak with our sergeant staff identified by the gold ties. Troopers and house safety personnel are present to ensure everybody's safety. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for reentry if you leave the room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Representative Davis, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have not, but I'll move on.
Thank you very much. Representative Davis moves the approval of the March 11th minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries, and the minutes of the March 11th, 2026 meeting are approved. The first bill on our agenda is House File 4615. Vice Chair Olson, you're at the table. And would you like to move House File 4615 before the committee with a recommendation that it be referred to Ways and Means?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 4615 to Ways and Means. This is a bill that involves basic pay for individuals assigned on state active duty. But whereas no one listens to a major when they talk, I have a major general, and everyone listens to major generals, so I would defer to the major general.
Thank you. General Manicki, please state your name and begin your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Major General Sean Mink. I'm the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. Thank you, Representative Olson. And I just want to come over this morning and say hello to the committee. I haven't been over here yet this year to address this committee, so thank you for your time. And since 2006, we've done about 185,000 man days of state active duty. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Roeder, our Executive Director of Military Affairs, to go over the House file briefly, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Bliss, Co-Chair Zhang, committee members. For the record, I'm Scott Roeder, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I would like to first thank Representative Olson for bringing House File 4615 forward, and I thank the committee for hearing it this morning. When the governor activates the National Guard under emergency executive order, the soldiers and airmen are paid under Minnesota Statute 19249, which is pay and allowance of officers and organizations. House File 4615 modifies Statute 19249 in two ways. First, it simplifies the language, removing duplicate subdivisions that cover officer and enlisted members separately. Secondly, it modifies the minimum base pay of $130 per day set by the Minnesota Legislature back in 1997 to today's, aligning the minimum base pay to the grade of E5 within the Defense Accounting Services pay tables, which are updated annually. While there's a DMA budget impact shown this year, the bill will not impact DMA's budget. Emergency funds are allocated for each emergency through Minnesota Statute 192.52. The next two slides will demonstrate the requested pay adjustments. This slide reflects the Defense, Finance, and Accounting Services pay tables from 1997. You will notice the calculated pay per day amounts for our lowest ranking members, pay grades E1 through E6, were extremely low considering the family, work, and educational disruptions from being ordered to state active service. Considering these factors, in 1997, the state passed and enacted a state active duty minimum base pay of $130. Over the years, the federal government has approved numerous cost of living increases to military pay, which under Minnesota Statute 192.49 benefits all soldiers and airmen. House File 4615, if passed, would increase the base pay for those lowest ranking members, grades E1 through E4, to the base pay grade of E5, and would continue to adjust in concert with the Defense, Finance, Accounting Service pay tables as cost of living increases are approved, thus eliminating the need for future legislative adjustments. With that, we welcome your questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the members? Seeing none, Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is wholly a wonderful thing that we can do to ensure that our soldiers and airmen are paid at a level in which they deserve. And when your current law says that you get paid less than what your actual pay grade is, it's a worthless law because you're paying them at their pay grade anyways. So this is a great thing that we can do, and I would renew my motion to send this bill to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Vice Chair Olson renews his motion that House File 4615 is recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Say nay. Motion carries, and House File 4615 is re-referred to Ways and Means. The next bill on our agenda is House File 3532. Vice Chair Olson, you can remain at the testifier table. And would you like to move House File 3532 before the division?
I would like to do so, Mr. Chair.
I understand you've been working with the MDVA on language that offsets the cost of burial by the burial fees MDVA may charge. So the recommendation will be that House File 3532 is re-referred to the General Register.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And the agreed-to language is referred to in the DE2 amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir. I would move the DE2 amendment.
Vice Chair Olson moves the DE2 amendment. Members, I would like the division to adopt the DE2 amendment and have testimony focused on the bill as amended by DE2. All in favor of adopting the DE2, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries, and the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Olson, you may begin your testimony and have your testifiers state their name for record for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3532 involves the burial eligibility for honorably discharged members of the Minnesota National Guard and other reserve components. I will defer to the department and their testifiers.
Thank you. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Morning, Chair Bliss. For the record, my name is David Swantek, and I serve as the Director of Memorial Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify to House File 3532, and thank you to Representative Olson for bringing this bill forward. As amended, this bill would allow honorably discharged members of the National Guard and other reserve components of the armed forces, along with their eligible dependents, to be interred in a state veterans cemetery. It also authorizes the commissioner to establish a fee schedule to help offset the cost of burial. I would like to thank Vice Chair Olson and Chair Bliss for their collaborative approach in working with the department to refine the language of this bill. Their efforts have resulted in a proposal that is administratively clear, workable, and fiscally supported. I would also like to highlight a few considerations for the committee as you evaluate this proposal and for potential discussion in future legislative sessions. If enacted, this bill would expand eligibility across all four Minnesota State Veterans Cemeteries. However, we anticipate that approximately 50% of the additional interments would occur at the State Veterans Cemetery in Little Falls due to its proximity to Camp Ripley, the National Guard training facility. This increased utilization would accelerate the consumption of both developed and undeveloped grave sites at this location. As the first established cemetery in our system, Little Falls is also the smallest geographically and currently accounts for nearly 80% of all interments statewide. As a result, it is already the site closest to reaching capacity with a current projected gravesite depletion timeline of approximately 48 years. Based on our estimates, the increased demand associated with this bill could reduce that timeline to approximately 30 years, an acceleration of 18 years. As the department continues to assess the impacts of this legislation and monitor interment trends under this expanded eligibility, it is likely that we will return to this committee in the future to discuss the need for additional funding and long-term capacity planning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, are you there for questions, or are you going to testify?
Chair, members, I'm not here to testify other than to introduce our new director for Memorial Affairs. So as Deputy Commissioner for Programs and Services at MDVA, we've expanded our capacity to include a fourth new directorate Director Swantek is our first formal director of Memorial Affairs as a standalone entity. So I just wanted to introduce you all to him today and to thank you again for the opportunity to be present.
Welcome.
Any questions for the testifiers or the author? Anybody? Quiet group this morning. I see we have a new member at the table. Well, welcome, Representative Duran. Nice to see you. Any closing remarks, Representative Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just one more way in which the state of Minnesota can, in a small way, honor the service of those who have served or have answered the call to protect us. And so I would ask that we renew my motion that we send this to the General Register.
Vice Chair Olson moves that House File 3532, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries, and the House File 3532, as amended, is referred to the General Register. The next bill in the House, next bill is House File 4492. That's my bill. Vice Chair Olson.
All right, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that we're moving House File 4492 to the General Register. Would you like to introduce your bill and move its sending it to the General Register?
Thank you, yes, Chair, that's my motion. My bill, we had last year, we created a task force for the SGU veterans, and we included the Commander's Task Force in that task force. And it came to our attention that they're not officially codified in state statute. So that is what this bill does. It does not raise the budget at all. And we do have a couple of testifiers.
Perfect. Would you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, co-chair, and committee members. My name is Brad Lindsay. I am the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4492, and thank you to Chair Bliss for bringing this bill forward. The Minnesota Commander's Task Force was originally created back in 1988 and is comprised of elected leaders, adjutants, and legislative staff from the eight largest congressionally chartered veteran service organizations in Minnesota. I've had the privilege of working with the Minnesota Commander's Task Force for in my entire time at the department, going back to 99. This bill codifies an organizational structure that has continued to be a key group here at the Capitol, advocating for our state's veterans. The Commander's Task Force advises the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, the legislature, and the governor on matters relating to veterans, the families of veterans, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Former Commissioner and retired Major General Larry Shelato used to refer to them as his board of directors, and I think that's how we've kind of treated them always. The CTF meets quarterly also to hear updates and provide feedback to district and state staff from Minnesota's congressional delegation. While the CTF chair and the elected leaders of the veteran service organizations change annually, having this organization and its frequent meetings, Veterans Day on the Hill, and other opportunities for advocacy is a constant and expeditious way for decision makers to have real-time input from our state's veterans. The CTF invites the department into their monthly meeting and is a great opportunity to provide updates directly to the leaders of our major veterans organizations, hear feedback on our budget and legislative proposals, and hear about emerging issues in the veterans communities. We even include them in our Support Our Troops grant review team to help us make decisions in those areas about funding for different organizations serving veterans and their families. And as Representative Bliss stated, they've been included in multiple things in the past, including the SGU task force most recently. This bill is an overdue update to Minnesota statutes, and MDVA strongly supports this bill becoming a law. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Mr. Kelly, were you looking to testify as well?
No, Chair. Thank you.
Perfect. Any questions? Yep. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious.
It doesn't sound like this list like has varied at all since 1988 in terms of these being the largest organizations, but is there a reason to make it static in law? Like, do you want to say, like, must consist of the following, but like not limited to, but including the following or something like that? It just seems like maybe there's another group that will like flourish in the future.
Mr. Kelly? Chair, Representative Feist, so it has largely been static. It started in 1988 with 9 organizations. The Vietnam Veterans of America folded their charter several years ago. These are the largest veterans organizations representing the most veterans in the state. They also have networks and national commanders. And so this is the structure that's always worked. I believe that if there were future large member-bodied, congressionally chartered organizations that the CTF would likely entertain adding folks. But right now, the CTF, as it's configured, is meant to have the congressionally chartered, which is a key distinction, membership. And when they're speaking, they truly are representing all of our state's veterans. And they, through their post homes and their meetings, they are, you know, it's frankly one of the best ways to get grassroots feedback in an expeditious manner that I've seen at the Capitol.
So. Follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, thank you so much for that answer. As long as you don't think it would be annoying to have to come back here if there's like another organization that becomes congressionally chartered, and that makes sense to me. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Lindsay before we move on to John Walker? No more questions? Is John Walker? Just walking in. Perfect. Perfect timing, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good.
Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes. My name is John Walker. I'm the department commander for the DAV of Minnesota and vice chair of the Commanders Task Force. We're here today asking that the Commanders Task Force be formalized. For years, you know, we have been providing feedback on veteran issues, like the SKG, Special Guerrilla Unit, SKU. And so we just think it's time for us to be, you know, formalized. And that's what we're asking here today. We're not looking for additional funding or anything like that, but we would definitely appreciate that to formalize this committee.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Barry Hendrickson. State your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Barry Hendrickson, Department of Minnesota, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Adjutant, Quartermaster, and Legislative Chair. The Commander's Task Force has been doing this for 40 years, but we do feel that it's important to formally recognize this relationship. As we all know, there can be changes on this committee, changes at other committees, changes in the Senate, changes with the governor, and so to formally recognize the CTF as the advisors is important. Obviously, we actively promote and participate in legislative hearings like we do today. We did yesterday. We'll be at the Senate and working with the governor, those types of things. We also have a great relationship with the Department of Veterans Affairs. And we've been instrumental, I also believe, in creating the omnibus bill that we established 4 years ago. So we look forward to continuing our relationship, but we do feel it's important to make it formal. And as we said, there is no cost, and we look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for testimony. Mr. Engstrom, would you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
I'm Tim Engstrom. I'm the Communications Director for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. I just wanted to go through some of our successes real quick. The track record shows that you all can, you know, I'm sure you can remember the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. We also eliminated the 8-year sunset for surviving spouses to receive the homestead market value exclusion and instead do a one-time transfer. That's huge. On the federal level, we pushed for a new vet center in St. Cloud. And if you go to St. Cloud, there's a vet center substation now, thanks to the CTF. CTF on the state level again, we increased the state grant for veteran service organizations. We often pushed to fully fund the MDVA several years in a row. Disabled veterans free entry into the Minnesota Arboretum changed how much the state takes from federal income that veterans have for homeless veterans when they enter into a shelter. You guys may remember that. We worked with Catholic Charities on that. Post 9/11 bonus, the several Minnesota Veterans and Military Affairs omnibus bills. We allow county veteran service officers greater access to county records to serve their veteran clients. Currently advocating for the modernization of the homestead property tax exclusion for disabled veterans. Of course, you may recall the Purple Star Schools program, bonding bill funding for maintaining MDVA buildings, as well as the SGU task force involvement. And that's just the ones I could think of right off the top of my head. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Does anyone have any questions of the testifiers or the chair on the bill? Is there any member discussion? I guess I didn't ask if there was any further testimony. Those are all three questions. Seeing none, Chair Bliss.
Thank you. This is an important bill. It's no cost to the state. We need to recognize the guys formally. So I move it forward to the General Register.
With that, Chair Bliss renews his motion that House File 4492 is re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The motion carries. House File 4492 is re-referred to the General Register. And you can have this seat back, Mr. Chair. I don't want it.
Thank you very much.
The last bill on our agenda is House File 4171. Representative Ray Rauer, please come to the testifier table with your testifiers. Representative Ray Rauer, would you like to move House File 4171 before the division with a recommendation it is referred to the Committee on Elections and Local Government?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ray Rauer, please begin your testimony.
Thank you so much. So first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing my bill, House File 4171. And I just want to take my minute that I have to thank all of the committee members for coming here each week and working in a bipartisan nature on for our veterans, for veterans issues. So 4171 applies to veterans who are disabled with a physical or mental impairment that has received a disability rating under United States Code. So these veterans with this bill would not have to pay the municipal fees for residential improvement that is required to accommodate their disability. Veterans often face significant barriers when simply trying to make their homes safe and accessible to them. Our veterans shouldn't have to pay fees for residential modifications because these changes are medically necessary to be safe in their home, to be more independent, to have a better quality of life. Removing the fees simply lowers costs for our disabled veterans. Many veterans require these changes due to severe injuries sustained during service to our nation. Modifications could be something such as a roll-in shower, stair lifts, specialized kitchens, and all of these things restore more independent living. So for all these reasons, I hope you will join me in supporting House File 4171. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to offer our testifier for testimony.
Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Bliss and members of the committee. My name is Mark Foster, Vice President of Legislative and Political Affairs for Housing First Minnesota. We're a statewide association of builders, remodelers, and trade partners focused on creating home ownership opportunities for all. Our members are the professionals doing this work every day. We are typically the ones pulling permits on behalf of homeowners, including veterans who need accessibility modifications to remain in their homes. We support this bill because we have seen firsthand the difference these projects make. The housing industry doesn't just talk about supporting veterans, we do the work. Through the Housing First Minnesota Foundation, our industry has completed impactful housing projects over the years, specifically serving veterans, helping them live safely, independently, and with dignity. To date, these efforts include 15 single-family Housing for Heroes homes and the 22-unit Veteran Village in the city of Eagan, representing more than $11 million in construction value and over 62,000 square feet of housing. These projects have created over 100 transitional beds, helping roughly 150 veterans each year. And over time, these homes will serve hundreds more, demonstrating the lasting impact of these investments. Projects like these don't just happen in theory. They happen because builders, remodelers, and industry partners step up, donate time and resources, and work through the same permitting systems this bill addresses. And what we see time and again is that costs, especially permitting costs, can become unnecessary barriers to getting critical work done. So House File 4171 is a targeted fix. It removes those barriers for disabled veterans who need essential homes modifications, ramps, accessible bathrooms, widened doorways, so they can stay in their homes. We do recognize that this proposal may result in small cost shifts. However, it has been well documented through public data over many years that many municipalities generate significant surpluses from building permit fees, often collecting well beyond, and in some cases up to millions of dollars beyond the actual cost of administering permits. With this bill, we are talking about a small number of projects for individuals who have given back to this country. If there is any appropriate use of those permitting surpluses, it is this. So we would call on our friends in local governments to support disabled veterans by absorbing these minimal costs and eliminating permit barriers to essential home modifications. This bill aligns policy with what our industry is already doing, stepping up to support veterans in a meaningful, tangible way. On behalf of Housing First Minnesota, we respectfully urge your support and thank you for your time.
Thank you. And Representative Bennett, you had a question?
I do, Mr. Chair. I actually have two questions, if that's okay. Representative Rayrar, thank you for this bill. I support this very much. I have two questions. One is more curiosity, but I understand what renovations for physical accommodations are, but it's also renovations, it sounds like, for mental impairment. What would those renovations look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the main reason for having that is to make sure the door is open and not closed on that. If there's anything that can help with any of the possible mental issues, things like PTSD, I think we don't want to close the door on that also being an option. I don't know if research has any better answers. No. Okay.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I was curious about that. It might maybe be good to define that somehow so it wouldn't potentially be abused. I don't think a veteran would do that, but it's good to have laws clarified distinctly. And then my other question is more, and again, I support this, but I also have been studying the reason that, local property taxes have been going up so much is from, a lot of it's from government mandates to local governments that are unfunded or underfunded. And we also need to reform permitting costs. So I'll just say that right away. I heard the gentleman say that that's another issue. But have local governments weighed in on this as to, is it going to increase property taxes? Are they able to just absorb it without any problem? I'm just wondering about that, even though I absolutely support your bill.
Representative Ray Brower.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Generally, the permitting fees are covering the work to do the permit in general, but as we heard from our testifier, they do end up often being more than what is needed to cover that, and there's a surplus. I don't believe that there would be an increase to property tax. We're talking about a loss of maybe $63,000 statewide. So if you spread that across all of our different cities, it's going to be a very minimal amount per city. Potentially, I could see, a permitting fee going up from $75 to $76 for the others in the city. And I think it's a small sacrifice to make sure our disabled veterans don't have to pay those fees.
And I see Mr. Kelly's chomping at the bits to say something here.
Thank you, Chair, members of the record. John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs from MDVA. I know research doesn't have anything to add, but I did want to try to address Representative Bennett's question before this one. So the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has a program. It's called the Home Improvement Structure Alterations Program. It's a lifetime benefit, one-time benefit that pays for up to $6,800 worth of improvements. So when we reviewed this bill, we kind of saw it as a way to stretch those dollars. But the lifetime benefit, it addresses a compensable disability So that doesn't make a distinction between a medical or mental health disability. So I think the way that this is phrased, it leaves that open for a member of a veteran who is getting this program. And then additionally, you know, that also can address a non-service connected disability if there's a service connected disability rated at least 50% disabling. So again, to the question, I know that was really for research, but we wanted to just weigh in that we had reviewed that language and it made sense to us based on the HESA program.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So just follow-up clarification. So basically, this is a good thing for veterans, and we're really saying if a veteran has a service disability of any kind and they're doing some kind of building project, they don't have to pay fees. They're not going to have to – they can just designate disability. Is that correct? Am I understanding that?
Understanding is that they would have to demonstrate proof of that to the county, just like for the market value exclusion, you have to demonstrate service connection disability. So they're experienced in that. And then, yes, if they are making improvements to based on their service connection, our understanding is that this would basically waive the fees and extend potentially the dollars going from that grant.
No follow-ups. Any other further questions? Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just thinking about on page 2, the proof of veteran status required, and I was wondering if you wanted to include cross-references to the SGU veterans so that it's clear that veterans under either definition would qualify.
Mr. Kelly.
Chair, Representative Feist, so while we're in the process of recognizing our SGU veterans at the state level, beyond the burial benefits from the National Cemeteries Administration, SGU veterans are not eligible for service-connected disability, so they would not be able to provide that proof of disability.
Representative Feist?
Yeah, thank you. I would just respectfully suggest maybe you think about including them in this benefit. Thank you.
Service-related disabilities are federally recognized, so it would have to be something from the federal government, I would assume.
Correct.
Chair. All right. Any further? Oh, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify so that I make sure I understand. So it's because it's cross-referencing to the Title 38. Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Rehrauer, closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just thank everyone again for hearing the bill and listening and encourage your support.
Thank you. Representative Rehrauer renews her motion that House File 4171 is recommended to be re-referred to Elections and Local Government. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. Motion carries and House File 4171 is re-referred to Elections and Local Government. Members and division staff and members of the public, before we adjourn, I want to draw your attention to the flyer promoting the Veterans Day on the Hill. This will be on April 23rd this year. And we have some comments on that. Mr. Engstrom, please.
The CTF asked me to provide you with any information, Chairman. Is that okay? Or
yeah,
if you
sure.
Don't have time.
So just state your name again for the record and begin.
Tim Engstrom. I'm the Communications Director for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. I'm also the Baseball Secretary, if you like Legion Baseball. Veterans Day on the Hill is our annual spring advocacy event. It's the doors open at the Armory at 9 a.m. April 23rd. National Commander of the American Legion, Dan K. Wiley, will provide the welcome message at 11 a.m. There's going to be a free meal provided, and then the program starts at noon. And during the program, the Disabled American Veterans National Commander, Coleman Nee, will speak. So you get two national commanders for the price of one. And there's not a price, but then the veterans will gather in front of the Veterans Service Building, and around 12:45 they march to the Capitol and assemble in the rotunda. Many of the veterans get there by transportation, either some of them have their own vans, but a lot of them take a coach bus and they pay for it with their own post money, but then the DAV reimburses them for half the cost of the transportation. And so it's one of the largest, if not maybe the largest, gathering of veterans in the state at any one place at one time. It usually gets around 600 veterans at one place. So I can't think of another event. There's events that may have more people, but to be that concentration of veterans is, I don't think there's anything that strong. So it's a really good thing to enjoy, and I hope you, as the members of this committee, come and participate in it. And I know some of you are speaking at it, too. So thank you for that.
Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I didn't catch Mr. Engstrom. What time is the actual rally in the rotunda?
They come up from the Veterans Service Building starting at 12:45, and the program in the Capitol will begin around 1:15 or 1:30, but it may be delayed because of the new security measures. So I'm not – don't ask me how that's going to work because but it's a thing.
Yeah, your hats might set off the metal detector.
Yes, it does. I asked the general why doesn't his pins set it off, but he said I look suspicious with his hat on.
I agree. For the new members that have never attended one of those, it's a very, very unique and moving scene to see all those heroes standing in one place. And do we still have a World War II veteran amongst us for that rally?
I'm pretty sure we will.
Okay. Well, that's
maybe
good
the
news.
Same one that's in the front row. So.
Yeah. It's to hear the place rumble when they do the Pledge of Allegiance, and it's just a moving event. So for you new guys, I highly recommend you attend that.
Chairman, may I recognize someone from Peggy Bennett's district? There is a 104-year-old World War II veteran in her district named Lupe Gasca, and he just recently had his birthday.
Oh, outstanding. So. Outstanding. All right. Well, with that, there is any further questions on Veterans Day on the Hill? No? Okay. There being no further business before the division today, this meeting is adjourned.